Husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today is the second part of a series we've been doing on family finances. I'm joined by two guests, Mark Ogletree and Craig Israelson, and I think I'll just ask you to briefly introduce yourself so that people can hear your voice and get to know you a little bit better. Mark, let's start with you.
Yeah, Mark Ogletree. I live in Provo now, teach at BYU. My wife Janie and I have been married for close to 30 years now. It seems like a long time and a short time at the same time. We have 8 children and a couple grandchildren now.
Oh, that's great. Well, welcome. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And Craig?
Craig Israelson, my wife and I live in Springville, Utah. We have 7 children. I teach at UVU in Orem after opportunities to teach at University of Missouri and BYU, and delight in the opportunity to talk about the good things that we can consider and ponder as we talk about money and resources.
I appreciate your approach to this as talking about the good things, because some people say that money is the root of all evil, and actually that's a misquote of the scriptures.
It's not
the money is the root.
It's the love of money.
Isn't that the truth? And so in our last episode together, we were laying a foundation of how finances really develop character. We talked about things like sacrifice, prioritization. We talked about things like agency, making choices, learning patience, which are so critical and important in developing our character and the character of a relationship in marriage and in family. So what I would hope we could do for this next half hour is pick your brains, because surely there are individuals there that are listening and they're saying, you know what? This is on my mind all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's like a stomach ache or a toothache. Maybe that's a better imagery. A toothache that I can still function, but every time I start to do activities, it's on the back of my mind, or sometimes the forefront of my mind is, well, how am I going to do this? How will I pay for this? Some individuals, they're saying, how can I provide better opportunities for my family? And it still weighs upon them. So what are some simple but very powerful and meaningful things that individuals can do in a marriage to say, what can I do now to improve my circumstances? Craig, you brought up the good, and I like this. What can we be doing to be able to cause this to be a force for good in our marriage, a force for good in our family? Just simple, basic, practical, the pragmatic approach to being able to use finances for a means to the good.
I think of this as kind of a what I call the airline test. And we're sitting in the window seat, and somebody's in the aisle seat, and there's a seat between us, and we're both secretly hoping that no one comes and sits in that middle seat.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, we all have. And then a person comes into the plane up in front. We recognize them. They're a close friend. We would love to sit by them. And so we beckon them warmly toward us, and we try to help them and facilitate them. Now my question is, we're all brothers and sisters. We know that. Why don't we do that for everyone? Well, with that little example or that little metaphor, here's a person, if those who are listening, for those that are married, this is your spouse, this is your eternal companion. As it pertains to financial conversations, the very least we can bring is civility, that we would be civil. And then that's the baseline. It can get a lot better than that. We can become very considerate. We can become thoughtful. We can become compassionate in that we see that person as a person with hopes and dreams and fears and struggles, and that we respond in light of those feelings and that sense of awareness. That kind of a precursor to a financial discussion is world-changing. It changes the environment in which that conversation takes place. And here's a specific, this is now a very specific comment. And I was taught this by a social service worker, LDS social services worker in Missouri. We need to use the HALT principle, H-A-L-T,
halt.
We should not, we probably should not have a financially related conversation if we're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired.
Oh, this is really good. Say those one more time.
Halt. Hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Those are impediments to the kind of conversation we're probably wanting to have. We need to solve those. Put ourselves in a little timeout. Have a Snickers bar, because we're never ourselves when we're hungry. And do whatever we have to do. Maybe take a nap. But prepare ourselves for the right kind of communication. And it's interesting to observe the Savior's life. He did that.
Exactly. Exactly. There was always that before large events, even small events, he always went and made sure that he was prepared and ready for the experience. Really nice principle. Mark, what comes to mind?
Well, one of the things I was thinking of is that I see couples who have goals in just about every area of their lives except for marriage, family, finances, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's kind of interesting. We have goals around marathons and to read books and to take elaborate trips, but we don't have many goals on our financial, the financial part of our lives. And so I do think that that's an important thing for families to consider. Another one is budgets. You know, the same kind of idea is true. Most of us work off of a budget at our work. We serve in the church. We have budgets in the church.
Right.
But once again, families seem to not have budgets.
You know, I'm going to say something just really quickly on this one, just for a point of clarification. It came up in a situation once where a budget is not a diary or a spending log, right?
Right.
I mean, some people say, well, hey, look, okay, I'm keeping a budget, and they're just writing down everything they're spending. That is not, I'm assuming, what you're talking about.
Not at all. In fact, I think a healthy budget is where a couple sits down together. They go through their finances, and they make this. They make their goals, and their And in their budget, they have the amount of money that they set aside for maybe entertainment and fun and other things. But for the most part, they're paying down debts. They're meeting their expenditures. And I have a just experience by, and I can just tell people from experience that with eight children, I think one of the only ways we ever made it in our life was with a budget, you know, that we reviewed often and talked about. So I would say that the budget, and then the second thing would be to involve our children in our finances.
Well, this is really good. Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, a good example I thought of was Elder Irene. You know, President Irene is a great example of sitting down every month with one of his daughters and going through their checkbook and balancing the checkbook together. And that was this daughter's job. You know, her and her dad would work together on that. But I think what happens is our children leave our homes and they really don't know much about finances. I know that I didn't. I left my home and didn't know a thing.
Well, my wife, when we were first married, she had never written a check before because her family had done cash only.
Yeah.
So she had never seen even how that side of the coin actually works, you know? And so we just assume that people are picking this up.
So our children need to be educated, and we have a responsibility to do that. I know in our home, when our children get married, the requirement is if you want a wedding reception, you have to read this book. And the book is The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey. And so our children read that. But I've been impressed with what families can do together. I mean, there's great strength in families working on goals together and their finances. And I think of a family that we knew in Arizona who paid their mortgage off by throwing newspapers together for a few years. You know, I thought that was a great, boy, talk about kids who knew how money worked by the time that experience was
over. How money worked, and also the essence of work.
Yeah.
Of how to work. Let me build upon this really quickly. Just a couple of comments. If you have any ideas, is building on the thought of teaching your children about finances. I like this concept. Any other ideas that come up? Some people are saying, okay, this is great. I want to teach my children about finances, how this works. And then they'll say, I don't really know the first way to do this. Are there some thoughts that come to mind of that they could try?
Yeah, you bet. Many years ago, our kids were maybe ranging from 3 years old to 12 or 13. And we thought, tonight's the night. So we got out the Monopoly money and we got a little stack that represented our take-home pay. And we said, okay, kids, watch this. And so we started to distribute those Monopoly dollars into little stacks. This stack represents the house payment.
Right.
This is this and this and this. And they were horrified. And I think, as I recall, one of them said, "Does that mean I can't get a bike?" or something like that. And the point was that as we're talking to a child, we're making sense. The words are accurate, but they do a lot better when they can see things.
That's right.
And they can handle it. You know, Piaget was right. You know, we kind of learn by doing. And so that was a powerful moment. Now, that moment has a shelf life. So that little lesson, that wears out over time. That's, you don't just do it once and then say, "Well, we did that." You know, it might be useful. You want to be careful not to do it so often that the kids become obsessed by the money and they misread that,
right,
that the parents are obsessed. It's meant to be a communication tool as needed. Another idea would be to set up a household 401k. In other words, a lot of employers, they'll match the 401k, the retirement contribution of an employee. Well, and so we see, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. So if I put a dollar in, my employer puts in 50 cents, let's say. Kids figure that out. Kids understand that incentive.
Right.
And so to have a household 401k, to the extent that a parent or parents can, kids pick that incentive up and they run with it. And so you can have a short-range goal for a child. You can have a long-range goal for a child. But what I've discovered is that even adults need short-range, mid-range, and long-range goals. The short-range goals and rewards keep them motivated toward the long range.
Right.
And so it's great to have a long range goal for, say, retirement, but it's just understanding who we are as people to set up a little sequence of short range rewards as we stay on track for our long range goals tends to keep that train moving.
This is really good. I love your comments and how we're looking at these elements of principles with practice and how those work together. And when you mentioned about it's not a one-time shot or the shelf life is short, I think of the Savior. I mean, repetition was part of his repertoire. You know, when it comes down to it, he was teaching over and over, but he didn't always teach it in the same way. But giving opportunity to practice the principle, I really like this experience. And also with goals, I like how you're mentioning, both of you mentioned about the importance of setting goals or a vision. I can't help but think of Proverbs, where there is no vision, the people perisheth, you know. But chunking that out in short, medium, and long range, and sometimes I think without those goals or without that perspective, there's a tendency to say we want everything now. And so we don't work towards. And then we start to get into this credit crunch and we start to get into this acquiring, which has problems principally as well as practically. Mark, did you want to add?
Yeah, I think, I think that it's going to be very difficult for our children to learn to manage money if they don't have any. And so we have to find creative ways, you know, for them to earn some money. I've never been a fan of paying our children for the chores of living in our home because we wanted them to learn how to serve and to help. But there are other things that they could do around our home to earn money, and I think that's an important thing because how can you manage it if you don't have it? The other thing I thought of was, our children have no concept where money comes from, and we've all had those discussions with our younger children where we've said, we don't have any money, and they'll say, well, just go to the bank and get some,
right?
I had a daughter a few years ago that said, why can't we go on a cruise? All these families go on cruises where we live. Why can't we go on a... So we sat down with our family budget, looked at it, and said, now you tell us, know where that's going to come from, right? So that was kind of an eye-opener for her. So I think if we find creative ways for our children to understand where money comes from and then how to manage it by being creative, and, we're going to end up buying, clothes for them anyway. We're going to end up paying for cheerleading lessons or piano or whatever. So why not structure things in our family where they can earn some money so that some of that comes out of their pocket to some degree.
I like this. Some of these comments bring me back to a pamphlet that the church uses called One for the Money, which was from a Hallmark talk by Elder Marv and Jay Ashton. And both of you touched upon one of the principles is teach your children to contribute. And so they learn to work, but also contribute to the experience. And there's a great benefit of learning to contribute, even if in many cases it's a family coming together where they all feel the value of bringing something about. I love this experience of learning to work, learning to contribute for the welfare of others. Let me ask a question about debt. We know avoid it, and then that's the end of the lesson. Okay, great. Thank you very much. We do live in a society where millions and millions of credit applications are sent out to individuals who they shouldn't be receiving those. I look at college age students, and boy, they are bombarded with opportunities. When I was younger, you couldn't get a credit card unless you established a line of credit. And it was kind of the catch 22 is, well, how do you establish credit if you can't ever get a credit, you know, a credit card? Nowadays, you just have to have a pulse. And in many cases, you don't have to have a pulse and you can get 7 credit cards. But this is something that's weighing heavily upon families, is the concept of debt, how to manage credit. Give me some practical ideas of how to approach this and what we can be doing about this credit monster, if you will.
I think it's important to recognize that all credit is not created equal. There is debt that has more meaning to us. In other words, the only reason we have a home is that we borrowed some money to get that home. Well, but that's a place of protection for our family.
Right.
That's an appreciating asset. There's the home value can often over time go up in value.
I've heard some call that an investment debt, so to speak. I don't know how you look at that, but...
For some, it has been, you know, if you grew up, my parents had a home in California and you know the rest of the story.
Right.
So the debt that seems to bother us most would be considered credit debt. So credit cards, whether it be a name brand card or just the credit that's offered in a store.
Right.
You go to a store in the mall and they'll tantalize you with, if you get our in-store credit card, you get 10% off.
You know, and I'm glad you're bringing this up because some people I've noticed, they don't think that that's a credit card because it's for a retailer. Yeah. This isn't the same as a credit card, but it actually is.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, credit very simply is spending money in advance of earning it.
Right.
And when you say it that bluntly, it doesn't sound like such a good idea. And so I think if we consider, what is the kind of debt that bothers us? You know, does my mortgage on my home bug me every moment I think about it? No, not so much. I mean, I'm anxious to pay it off and right. get it resolved. But credit card debt, does that bug me? Yeah, boy, that can really bother people. So if the very least we can do is try to minimize the sort of debt that really bugs us, our gut is going to tell us which debt is better debt versus worse debt. And that's in line with what all the prophets and apostles have said for years and years. Even as recently as April of 2009, Elder Hales talked about this again. We spoke about being provident providers.
Right.
And he said, a modest home may necessitate some debt, a modest car. And the key words he used were modest.
Right.
Modest.
But that has to do with hemlines and tight-fitting clothing, right? The reason I bring this up is we just had a discussion about this in our home just last night of what modesty is. And so feel a little bit more about what you mean by modesty, because we say this in the church and automatically think that it's the way that we clothe ourselves, but this is the greater principle.
Well, I'm going to use a phrase that we're familiar with, sufficient for our needs.
Good.
That is modesty. If it's sufficient for our needs, the expression is not sufficient for our wants. And that delineation is very important, sufficient for our needs. And I've always been grateful to my parents. I think they have been very modest in how they have utilized their resources. And that's a legacy that parents can give their children. Or they can create other legacies.
That's right.
Of extravagance, for example.
That's good. Okay, before we move on, we're getting short on time, but I want you to define for me another term we use a lot in the church that it seems to not be very clear to some individuals is provident. You know, as we talk about this situation of being provident in our living. And you even use that. What does that mean? I mean, what's going on with this, with that word? What does that mean to you? I'm not asking for the dictionary, but what do we mean by that term? We use self-reliance, you know, to be provident in our living, modest in our needs and wants, thrifty. Mark?
I think you just said it. I mean, I think all those words are great synonyms for, you know, for living within our means, for being modest, you know, in our expenditures, for being self-disciplined. I think that all of those point to what it means to live providently.
Okay. Any other thoughts that come up with, since we're kind of short on time, let's get our very best nuggets here, is what would be most helpful to individuals to use finances to bring about the good in their relationships, their family relationships, and even in their disciple relationships? Mark?
I wanted to read a statement from President Hinckley. He said, "I am satisfied that money is the root of more trouble in marriage than all other causes combined." I think that is a huge statement, a very significant statement. I don't believe that, I was going to say it this way, that I think debt and financial troubles in a marriage can drain the life out of a couple almost quicker than just about anything else. And so there should be a lot of passion and desire and interest to avoid debt like the plague, as President Hinckley used to say it, and to live modestly, you know, but yet to have sufficient for our needs and to be able to be in a position, and this is a key for me, to be in a position to help other people. I remember when I was a missionary going out, I'd just been a member of the church a short time, and some members of our ward slid me some money, you know, like it was in an envelope or a book, and it was a significant amount of money in some cases, but all I could think about was, I hope I can do that one day, you know, and there's great peace and happiness, I think, that comes from being in a position where we've taken care of our family and now we can focus on helping those around us who need our help.
That's good.
Yeah, that's great. There's a quote by Elder Maxwell that I love. Our first estate featured learning of a cognitive type. The second estate, however, is one that emphasizes experiential learning through applying, proving, and testing. We have moved, as it were, from first estate theory to second estate laboratory. And having been an educator for 2.5 decades, that's just such a neat idea. A student might ask, is there a lab with this class? And we asked Father, is there a lab with my existence? Yes, there is. It's called Earth. And you'll go down and you'll learn some things in ways you wouldn't have expected. It's the small and simple things.
Right.
And so all of these aspects of our life that we might consider mundane, the budgeting, the fixing meals, the personal hygiene of children and ourselves, are these just impediments to our real life? No, this is our real life. And the grace and the dignity and the intentionality, as we find meaning in these day-to-day behaviors, that is how Father is growing his children. And that's the beautiful good news, because if the meaning of our life was only available in the Hollywood moment, most of us would never get to the meaning, because most of us don't have a Hollywood moment. The meaning and the richness of our lives is in, and this is going to sound so weird, but it's in the mundane, repetitive opportunities we have to interact graciously with each other, to be gracious in our resources with others. That's the reality. And so to think that budgeting is the bane of our existence, no, it's uh-huh. It's almost the essence of our existence.
Exactly. Oh, well, I love this. As a matter of fact, the title for our program is Gospel Solutions for Families in Everyday Living,
every day.
In the trenches of living. So this is very good. Well, we have covered so many different little elements and tidbits, but all of them, in my estimation, are gems. And so this is almost like a primer, a starting place of getting our appetite going and seeing what's out there. So just in a parting way, very quickly, what other resources have you come across? I know that the church provides resources, and a lot of members aren't even aware of things that are out there that could be very helpful. And so maybe those who have been listening have been thinking, this is a good starting point, because I think like I said, very good things have been said for worthy of additional thought. But now they are saying, what else can I do? Where can we go? Have you come across anything that has been produced by the church or resources available that would be very helpful?
I think the providentliving.org site is a wonderful resource for us. And also the personalfinance.byu.edu is another wonderful resource with lessons and ideas. You know, like I said, I love Dave Ramsey's book, The Total Money Makeover, because I think what he does is he takes probably some complex ideas for people like Craig that have studied in this area their whole life, but puts them in terms for lay people like us that we can understand. And I still think it's always wonderful to have some kind of mentor in our lives. You know, there's always someone in a ward or stake that has kind of figured out the financial part of their lives, and just to sit with someone like that and to talk for a little while, I've learned more in those discussions than probably from anything I've ever read.
I think that's really good. It's the back and forth experience, showing, telling, talking, watching, etc., exploring, which is really good. Craig, thoughts?
I think Luke chapter 15 is very helpful to read over and over and over until we start to believe it. And a book by Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. Very, very beautiful book that helps us prioritize. And Provident Living, what Mark said, is a very, very rich site. And just generally, taking a moment and asking our parents. I'm almost 55 years old. My parents are still alive. Just asking them, tell me about what you've learned about resource, financial stewardship, resource management. Asking, like Mark was saying, asking people that have been down the trail. And I think what we're going to find is they have learned that the secret is enduring and enjoying and relishing the day-to-day repetitive experiences. Because they're repetitive, Father has given us another chance to do it better.
This is good. Well, thank you so much for your comments. I can't help but think of, while we have practical advice, we also have principally-based concepts here. They're so critical. I love how you were just talking about make sure that you do A, B, and C and get a calculator out and do this. That is important, but also referring to principles of Scripture, character development. I think that is really where not just provident living, but providential living comes in, where I honestly believe that our Father in heaven will help us along the path. As you mentioned, life is the laboratory, and yet it's not a lab experience where we cannot ask, you know, and I appreciate the elements where our Father in heaven will guide and direct and also put others in our path. I've loved what you've said. I think of my own experience, and something that I think is worth mentioning here in closing is this is a learning experience. It sounds like you mentioned you still ask your parents.
Yeah.
And you have seven children.
Seven children.
And some people are like, wait a second, I thought that I got through with that when I was at this stage in my life. You mean there's more to learn? Oh, isn't there ever more to learn? Constantly learning and finding ways. And I found in my experience, we're at the stage where we're approaching with adult children and married children. We start to ask couples, well, how do you do this when you go on vacation? Do you do this? Do you pay? Or how does this work?
Right,
and it's so helpful to catch other ideas. And so there's plenty there on LDS.org. There are many different ways that we can explore with resources. So thank you so much for all that you have done to help us today to understand, at least in a beginning stage, principles and practices of family finances. I appreciate your help. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.